confused. Diversity.
You have caused confusion.
I will crash his board.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another Office Hours. I don't see this one going that long. I do have a poll in the chat asking how long does indeed Starmer have left? Is it a week? Is it a month? Is it a year? Or will he in fact stay until 2029? I asked this question on Twitter earlier as well, and the denizens at Twitter, 40% of them think he's actually going to just stick it out, the Starm bot. Only 7.3 think he's going to be gone within the week, and opinion split, but the majority think he's going to stick it out. I have to say it's starting to look more and more questionable as to how he can stick it out. This Mandelson story has run and run, and as far as I can tell, number 10 is in an absolute shambles. Not only did, there have been rumors of Starmer screaming. The language was screaming at Morgan McSweeney. You're meant to protect me. You did not protect me, Morgan. Now you shall face the full force of the law. So Starmer is furious at Morgan McSweeney. There's a lot of stories on how where is Mandy? Let's have a look.
Country in which I have spent so much of my adult life and admire so much.
There is a question marks as to how much Starmer knew beforehand. He's denying the information he had. A lot of people are saying that that's not true, that he knew all of the stuff, that McSweeney knew it all, and that they just calculated that Mandy's football manager stats and his skill, his acumen, his know-how, basically the quote is, the risk was worth it, right? The Prince of Darkness, the risk was worth it. And a lot of people have said that a lot of people within the Labour Party didn't want Mandy back, but that Starmer and McSweeney forced it through. As we're talking now, there is a three-hour debate in Parliament going on. This is the live feed of The Telegraph with this headline, Starmer and McSweeney forced through Mandelson. And then in the middle of it all, a guy called this guy here, his name's not Overton, it's nearly Overton. It's a man called... Paul Ovendon. Well, he's been done in the oven now because he has had to resign for one of the most ridiculous reasons I've ever seen anybody have to resign. He was playing Shag, Marry, Kill at some event, and Overton in this message set here. Somebody asking who would use the strap-on out of her, and Diane Abbott was the highlight low light, and he basically has been fired for joking about Diane Abbott shagging someone with a strap-on in Shag, Marry, Kill. Yeah. and now you can blame him for putting that image in all of your heads as well. But this guy who's gone was like a key aide, if you ever watch Thick of It, they've got those aides everywhere. They're basically the kind of the hands, the eyes, the ears, the doers of, and Starmer has lost his number one aide. McSweeney is in a lot of trouble as well because he was the one that pushed this through. So number 10 is in an absolute shambles at the moment. In the middle of it all, their one-in, one-out deal with France has already fallen apart as on the very first deportation that they attempted, some charity douchebag somewhere complained and they immediately have folded. So that deportation did not go ahead. Absolute omni shambles, as they say. Then also to compound matters, there was the Tommy march on the weekend. And I thought Starmer was doing well, staying quiet, not really just letting it all play out. Of course, he had to come out and call everybody fascist and all the rest of it. So he played that one badly as well. Basically, the wheels are falling off. The wheels are falling off for this government. The vultures are circling. And I always said, the thing is, if the powers that be decide that it's Starmer's time to go, they can make life awfully difficult for him. Question is the Starmbot so immune to normal human emotions that he will try to dig in, that he will refuse to go? And it seems like a lot of you guys think that the majority of you think that he is gonna dig in all the way till 2029. What has Starmer got on his side? Well, he's a very procedural man. He's very full force of the law. And basically, unless the Labour Party decide to revolt and try to oust him by installing somebody else, by having a new leader, Andy Burnham is the one who's being touted by the media, Starmer can limp on indefinitely until 2029. There's actually nothing that anyone can do to force him out, unless the revelations about him or about his cabinet get even worse. Okay, I don't know how much you can get much worse than appointing someone who was bezzy mates with a convicted paedophile. There could be further things that could come out about the Starmer administration, at the Starmer ministry, I should say. And all of the talk was over the weekend that Mandelson is furious himself and is going to go nuclear. That Mandelson has got all the receipts. Mandelson knows where every skeleton is, every closet is. And he is just going to, like a madman, enact his revenge, like Dominic Cummings times 10. Do you remember when Dominic Cummings did in Boris Johnson? Well, the talk is that Mandy is now going to do in Starmer. Very interesting times, friends. Very interesting times. I'll remind everyone, buy a course at the academic agency, Trivium, buy that one. And when I come back, I'll talk about this a little bit more. Hold on, Trivium. Yeah.
Academic agency.
So yeah, pick up the Trivium today. Now, Andy Burnham, he has been on manoeuvres and he's using the Hillsborough disaster because the people of Hillsborough still have not had justice. They still haven't had a decent report as far as they're concerned. So, you know, that's still a live issue, even like, what is it, 35 years after it happened. And that's been all over the news. And just today, Starmer was basically forced to do something to try to head Burnham off. So he's being flanked from the left by Burnham, but he's being flanked from the right even more by the Tories, by Reform, and by the Tory press, basically, who have been circling the wagons for some weeks now. And as I talked about on my video with Ed Dutton yesterday, I think we're in the midst of a kind of soft coup in this country, whereby we're going to get Prime Minister Farage and they are trying to align UK politics with US politics, i.e. we're going to get like a Trumpy British administration so that we're not at odds, basically. So we're on the same page, and they're trying to use all these different mechanisms to do that. A lot of people have asked me, whither the Dark Lord, whither Blair? Well, the thing is, one, the Starmer government has been an absolute colossal shit show, but Blair is getting what he wants out of it. What does Blair want out of it? The furtherment of his agenda, digital ID, bringing AI on board, and all of that stuff, the Blair control grid. Well, he's got all of that already. That's what Blair wanted out of the government. He didn't give a shit if, the Starmer sinks or swims, really. He's got no interest in Starmer. His interest is in his agenda. And so then the question is, if Nigel came in, how compliant would Nigel be with Blair? Well, I think we've already had our answer on that. If you remember, during COVID, Farage was singing Blair's praises. And in fact, he gave an interview not that long ago saying that Tony Blair had it right, and I'm trying to be more like Tony Blair. Nigel Farage said that. If you don't believe me, I'll show you. Hold on. Where's Nigel Farage? Nigel Farage, Tony Blair. So you can see, Farage endorsed Blair to be the UK's vaccination czar during COVID. He backed Tony Blair in 2021. A lot of you will remember that, around the time he was banging pots and pans and so on. And just like every other Tory who absolutely loves Blair, Nigel also loves Tony Blair. Yay! Yeah. So the Dark Lord's not going to really worry if it's Reform or Tory or Labour. You know, obviously Labour, he's got a vested interest in Labour, but he doesn't really care. He can get his agenda through as he is in America. As he is in America, Tony Blair notably being one of the few people who's very friendly with the Trump administration. Tony Blair has been over in Gaza. Don't know what he's been doing in Gaza, but he is. He's been in Gaza for the past few weeks, which is why he's been a little bit quiet. And he's also been attending regular meetings at the White House on that issue. He's mates with Jared Kushner. So Tony, he'll be fine. He doesn't really mind if this Labour government dies. I think Blair has kind of lost patience a little bit with Starmer when he basically gave the order for Ed Miliband to go back in April, and Ed Miliband is still there. Ed Miliband is still there, cutting awful, awful interviews. In fact, I saw an interview with Ed Miliband. Let's just remind ourselves of this meanie-mouthed disgrace, Ed Miliband. Hold on. I'll talk a little bit more about Lewis Goodall in a second. And I also want to mention some of the theories around Charlie Kirk before we get to Super Chats and things. But let me just remind you of this person, Ed Miliband, because I think he is the symbol of Starmer's weakness and is a permanent reminder of the extent to which Starmer is not Blair, right? If it was Blair, this guy would have been long gone, absolutely long gone. But Starmer is a weak leader who always, always does the wrong thing. Here is Ed Miliband just yesterday talking to Andrew Marr.
Very close associate in the past of Donald Trump, the world's richest man, said to the crowds in terms that they should turn to violence and in terms suggested it was time to overthrow the elected British government. What's your reaction?
Who the hell is this guy is my reaction. Just because you're a billionaire, it doesn't give you a right to come and tell us how to run our country.
Who the hell is this guy? Who the hell is this guy is my reaction.
Throw the elected British government. What's your reaction?
Who the hell is this guy is my reaction. Just because you're a billionaire, it doesn't give you a right to come and tell us how to run our country. And look, as far as I can see, this guy is a publicity-seeking narcissist who is inciting violence on our streets. Mm. And honestly, you know, he should go back to running his car company, and I think, as the Americans would say, butt out of our politics.
Ugh. Hate Ed Miliband. On Lewis Goodall, I made a video earlier on. If you're not aware, a lot of people, hundreds of people, possibly even thousands of people at this point, have complained to Ofcom about the comments of Lewis Goodall, which I think are an absolute disgrace. Let me play the clip and then I'll tell you why I've got such a problem with this. Let me just play the clip again if you missed my video from earlier.
To emphasize, his murder is appalling, but the idea that he was...
His murder is appalling, but there's your first problem, Lewis. His murder is appalling, but there is no but. How can... Everything after the but is a problem here, okay? And it is exactly this reason, it is exactly rhetoric, like Lewis Goodall is spouting in this video here, that has led to things like this happening. This is so dangerous, what Lewis Goodall is doing here. And it's for this reason that I have complained to Ofcom, I have complained to Global Media, I have complained to HSBC, who are the sponsors of this show, asking them if they want to be involved with somebody who is basically insinuating that Charlie Kirk had it coming, right? Listen to what he says now.
Murdered for espousing some sort of common sense, mainstream set of views that others dared not say is nonsense, right? I mean, you cannot say, there is no polling. If any of it exists out there, please show it to me. But there is no polling which would show majority views, even in the United States, for saying that being gay is an error and comparing it to drug addiction, for not believing in abortion in almost any circumstances.
There actually is polling showing that. When I remember, I think it was Baroness Worsley herself did a polling of the Muslim community, who presumably Goodall is in favour of, absolutely showing that it was a completely normal view among that population. So let's not, and he would never dare call that out, is what I'm saying. So it's absolutely a normal view. I've met plenty of fundamentalist Christians and American right-wingers. These are absolutely bog-standard views. And Charlie Kirk was a moderate. And these are standard Christian views. They've been standard views for centuries. So let's see what else he says here.
For spreading false...
But hold on. It's not actually the point. Let's just pretend, okay, that these were absolutely wild views that Charlie Kirk had, okay? It's still not okay. It's still not okay what happened to him. Just because somebody has views that you disagree with does not make them fair game for political violence, Lewis Goodall. For example, I find Lewis Goodall's view that there should be 100% inheritance tax, which is, by any polling, by any normal metric, an extreme, far-left, communist view that almost nobody in the entire country, okay, let alone Europe or America, agrees with. Okay, nobody agrees with it, with the Lewis Goodall, only like a lunatic fringe. But I would never then expect people to act on that disagreement with you, Lewis Goodall. Okay, what you're doing in this is bear in mind now, this was a day after Charlie Kirk had been shot in the neck, blood spurting everywhere. The world saw it. Awful, awful murder that had taken place. Body's not even cold. And this doofus is here on national radio, national TV, basically telling the nation, oh, look, he kind of like, let's be honest, though, his views were pretty out there. Let's be honest, he kind of had it coming. This is not on. This is not on. And it is normalizing a situation in which political violence is to be expected. This can't be allowed to fly without many, many people. I encourage you to do it as well. complaining about what he's doing here. He actually goes on to mention Boris Johnson in a second. Boris Johnson has this right. Lewis Goodall has this wrong. And as a broadcast journalist, he has a responsibility not to inflame tensions at a time when tensions are pretty high and at a time in the direct aftermath of one of the worst political assassinations we've seen in a generation. This is reckless broadcasting from Lewis Goodall. And I think it probably breaches all sorts of codes as well. Let's carry on.
Hoods about voter fraud, COVID, other conspiracy theories, opposing birth control, having very traditional views on the role of women, and claiming in one tweet that the great replacement theory was actively UK government policy, right? And given all of that, you would think that kind of beatifying Charlie Kirk.
I remember polling was done that showed that a lot of people who vote Republican and a lot of people who vote either Reform or a Conservative believe in that theory. Whether for right or wrong, people believe in that theory. The raw majority of Republicans believe that the 2020 election was stolen. Okay, it's not up to you, Lewis Goodall, to say what is like beyond, you know, what is, you know, fine or what is mainstream and what is beyond the pale. It's not up to you, Lewis. Because clearly you don't have your finger on the pulse because your views, as we've seen, are very far to one extreme end of the political spectrum, right? So the frame game he's doing here, saying, oh, well, all of these views are completely outside the Overton window. No, they're not. They're absolutely mainstream views. Absolutely. Donald Trump won a raw majority running on exactly that, you blind, idiotic. I mean, it is ridiculous to say that Charlie Kirk didn't just have dead median kind of normie politics, because that's what he did. This guy is living in an absolute cloud cuckoo bubble around the M25.
Might be confined purely to the kind of outer fringes of the MAGA world, but it hasn't been. And I think one of the most striking things about the last 24 hours has been a reminder of the extent to which there is now a common sort of radical right Anglosphere, US, UK shared conversation, which goes up to and includes our former Prime Minister Boris Johnson.
Right. If it's common, and if it goes across the Anglo-American space all the way to Boris Johnson, the most far left bloody conservative Prime Minister of all time, right? Boris Wave Johnson. Okay. If it goes all the way to Boris Johnson, Lewis, doesn't that not just suggest that it's completely mainstream and normal views? Does it not suggest that it's you who's missing something here? What is the purpose of this spiel? Somebody watching this who disagrees that we should be complaining about this, or we should be taking it up with his sponsors or taking it up with his employers. What is the purpose of this rant from Lewis Goodall? The guy has just died. Right? Not even a basic modicum of decency, right, and respect. Right? He in one second he says, oh yeah, this was awful. But, and then he launches in a massive attack on Charlie Kirk. What is the purpose of this, Lewis Goodall? If not, basically to say, yeah, he, his views, he probably had it coming, didn't he? He probably had it, you know, fair enough then. As I said in my video earlier on, this all started with, it's fine to punch a Nazi. It was fine to punch Dickie Spencer, Richard Spencer, in the face just because he's a quote-unquote Nazi. This is the logic of this. This is what these people believe. This is why political violence is getting normalized, because of views like Lewis Goodall. And I maintain that the timing of this rant a day after Charlie Kirk was assassinated is not on, and we cannot stand for it here. Because when he is saying Charlie Kirk, he's talking about you. He's talking about Boris Johnson. He's talking about Nigel Farage. And he's talking about you in this chat. He's talking about every single one of you who has any of these beliefs that he disagrees with, whether it's on COVID or whether it's on the 2020 election or whether it's on LGBTQ+ or whatever else. If Lewis Goodall considers it beyond the pale, oh yeah, well, then you know, you've probably had it coming to you. It's not on. This rant that he gave here, he needs to apologize for. News agents need to take it down, And hopefully Ofcom will give them a massive fine for it as well. This is just, this is a tacit endorsement of political violence, in my opinion.
Boris Johnson tweeting, the murder of Charlie Kirk is a tragedy and a sign of the utter desperation and cowardice of those who could not defeat him in argument. Kirk had been killed not for espousing extremist views, because he didn't. He's been killed for saying things that used to be simple common sense.
Yeah, for the first time in his life, Boris Johnson has said something that is sensible, centred, normal. Absolutely, Boris Johnson is right. And why does Boris Johnson say this? Because Boris Johnson, a guy who, in my opinion, is an extreme liberal, right, for what he did when he was the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson has been called fascist, far right, blah, 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 by people like Lewis Goodall, who put his life in danger. Nigel Farage, who, again, is a milquetoast, is, as we were talking about earlier on, completely fine with Tony Blair's agenda in almost all ways. Nigel Farage is also called all these names, far right, fascist, blah, blah, blah. And when they do that, they put their lives in danger and they put our lives in danger as well. Because I have been called these sorts of things. I'm not on the far right either. I've been saying in recent days, if you write down my opinions, if you write down my political views, it's basically center left. I've said over and over on this show, the correct political formula for this country is Blue Labour, right? Starmer and McSweeney, they haven't been able to pull it off. It's been a disaster. But basically, where are my politics? It's in and around Blue Labour, okay? I'll have a video later this week talking about Enoch Powell. You know, I'm still massively against mass immigration, but it was always a left-wing, centre-left view to be against immigration, okay? That is a perversion of what the centre-left was always about, being pro-immigration. But on every other respect, I'm for controls, regulation and controls, and protection for workers. And what immigration controls are, ultimately, are protection for labour, right? So it should absolutely be a natural. It is actually the stated view of Keir Starmer, in theory, that he's against mass immigration as well. So what I'm saying is, it's bad for people to be smeared with these sorts of labels when there are nutters around who have been radicalized by people like Lewis Goodall. It's really dangerous. And in this week, rather than coming out guns blazing as he has been, Goodall should be contrite. He should be conciliatory, and he should be calling for a dialing down of the rhetoric, not a dialing up of the rhetoric, which is what he's doing here.
Been killed because he had the courage to stand up publicly for reasonable opinions held by millions and millions.
I think that's a real window into Boris Johnson's mind.
All right, that's enough. So anyway, I've said my bit. I've made the video, made my appeal. I've made umpteen tweets encouraging people to take action on Lewis Goodall, because there's actually a chance that they might actually do something about it this week, given the circumstances. I know in America, a lot of people, I mean, I saw Alistair Campbell had to come out and apologize for comments that he had made. So if Alistair Campbell can come out and apologize, so can Lewis Goodall. Right. So it's not impossible. Even Alistair Campbell apologized for his comments this week. OK. What else? Well, speaking of Charlie Kirk, I've opened my Pepsi Max here. Someone saying Blue Labour is not how my politics is framed on Wikipedia. Well, you see, this is it. Whoever is in charge of Wikipedia has the same sort of opinions as Lewis Goodall. And there's, horrible organisations like Hope Not Hate exist, and they spread lies and they smear people as well. On that front, by the way, I've got a suspicion that Hope Not Hate aren't going to exist, let's say, in a year from now. I've seen that various MPs have been investigating them. Their funding's been pulled. I think they're gone, basically, and I think they won't exist in a year from now. You can bookmark that one. But what else? What else? Let's talk about Charlie Kirk. So I don't want to And I'm not going to make any videos about this. It's not the sort of content I make. I don't like speculate. I don't really like speculation, especially when we can't know things, or it's going to be one of those things like JFK that people are still going to be talking about in 20 or 30 years. But one thing I do know is this, right? Anybody raging at you for certain lines of inquiry, right? There are certain lines of inquiry that are absolutely rational, that absolutely should be looked at, especially given the information that's coming out. Information about money that Charlie Kirk was offered, information about certain billionaires who were unhappy with guests that Charlie Kirk had on, the way it's being framed, the tweets that have been deleted by certain individuals. All of these are relevant information. So if you are rational and if you follow evidence, you absolutely should be looking at that, and there should be question marks over anybody telling you vehemently, don't look at that, don't look at that. You're losing credibility if you look at that. You're a nutter if you look at that. You're crazy if you look at that. You're none of those things. You're actually just following, you're asking natural questions. Another thing is, since when do people just believe everything the FBI tells them? Do you believe everything the FBI tells you? I don't. So, yeah, that's all I'm going to say on that. But it's been notable that some people are trying to shut down that conversation. And really, there's no reason to shut it down. I also think that it's kind of interesting how his death is being used for political ends on the American right. Basically, to get people back on the reservation, to stop asking questions about, you know, Jeffrey Epstein, for example, to stop asking questions about foreign policy, and to get back into the old culture war frame, the left versus right, the culture war. Now it's all about troons again, the trans issue again. So there's a lot of interesting questions there. I saw Gareth Icke put out a video. Simply asking this question: who benefits? Who benefits? And I watched that video, and I thought, it's interesting in current year that people like Gareth Icke, who's David Icke's son. Now, I've never heard Gareth Icke talk about the lizards, right? I've never heard him talk about the lizards. I think he's my age. He's just a year older than I am, Gareth Icke, right? I've never heard him go like quite that schizo, but obviously, you know, his father's David Icke. But honestly, in current year, I find him to be more, how can I put this, less cringy than a lot of voices on the so-called online right, who are so easily driven by emotion and herded along, and so easily fall into line on every single topic that they are no longer interesting in any respect, to be honest, many of them. Icke, in my view, Gareth Icke, that is asking the right sorts of questions. Not everybody, of course. But there's a lot of question marks over that. And if people really care, they shouldn't just take some sort of official line lying down. They should want to get to the bottom of it. All right, so that's my bit on that. Now, it's not schizo, is it? It's not actually schizo, because lots of arrows point in that direction. The information is clear. Tweets are being deleted in real time. You know, lots and lots of witnesses have come forward and said, yeah, absolutely, Charlie was moving in a different direction. And to me, a lot of it, I mean, let me just put it this way. I'm reminded a lot of The Godfather. Luca Brasi sleeps with the fishes. Do you remember that? I'm reminded a lot. Nobody turns against the family. That's what I'm reminded of, right? That's what I'm reminded of. You know, it really does smack of it. So there's a lot. There's a lot of stuff out there. I am not the sort of person who makes this sort of stuff. I very seldom make speculative or conspiracy minded stuff. But on this occasion, I think there are a lot of questions to be asked. So, and I think they're valid. I think they're not, you know, there's been this big attempt to say, oh, well, it damages anybody's credibility to look in that direction. No, it doesn't. It absolutely does not damage their credibility whatsoever. They're perfectly natural, normal, logical questions to ask, given the evidence in front of us. Right. And that, another thing people say, well, not everything has to do with them. Yeah, that's true. Not everything does have to do with them. But this absolutely does. This, with somebody intimately connected in their network who wanted to move out of their network and then was, you know, told off. And then it absolutely is relevant. It does point to it. It does have to do with it. So don't give me that. Don't give me that. Okay. Let's move on now. Let's move on. It's not schizo whatsoever to ask those sorts of questions at all. At all. And there are plenty of people making that sort of stuff, which you can go and look at. I think, personally, that we'll never find out. Whatever the truth is, we'll never find it out. Okay, Coney says, first of all, let's look, please, at some super thanks, and then we'll look at super chats, and then we will get out of here. I am smoking, by the way, an H. Upman Magnum 46. Beautiful cigar to have after lunch. Okay. From Super Thanks, here we go. So from last week's office hours, whenever that was, this is on Did Stalin Really Kill 20 Million People by Blackudar. AA, says Blackudar. I saw a video on the Predictive History Channel about how the veneration of Stalin in Russia is due to his partnering with the Orthodox Church. He also talked about how Putin is seen by many as a sort of spiritual successor to or reincarnation of Stalin, and is playing out some sort of prophecy of some monk on Mount Athos. It's pretty wild stuff and quite entertaining. Yeah, all of that sounds plausible, i.e. not that Putin really is the reincarnation of Stalin, but that people in Russia believe this. That doesn't sound like a stretch to me. MTX Cameron says, this is on last week's office hours. He says, after being quite pleasantly surprised at reform last week and even feeling almost somewhat positive about him, I've snapped back to reality this weekend. Back to reality. Oh, there goes gravity. After seeing the cringe fest that was the Reform Party conference, I've been having nightmares of the woman singing in the crowd. Very fitting that she called it some insomnia, because that's what it's given me. Last week's Deepest Law, Thomas Hone says, a proper version of 433 would be for you all to silent watch, but with microphones permanently on at self-selected input volume. No escaping Horace's street noises. AA's tormentors were tragically a part of his performance all those years ago. Well, that was when I did the John Cage piece, 433, with my mate. And it was crashed after 30 seconds by a group of lads who were dressed as the Spice Girls. That actually happened because they wouldn't allow us to stand there in silence for 4 minutes and 33 seconds. It was pretty amazing, though. I was wearing a tux. My mate was wearing a tux. He sat at the piano. I stood at the mic, and we stood there still as statues before I was rugby tackled to the ground by a 15-stone lad dressed as Baby Spice. That is actually true. Captain Smith said, best Stalin and Tony Blair apologist channel on YouTube. That is on Did Tony Blair Begin the Downfall of Britain? You know, interestingly, I think Michael Gove watched that video. Do you know why? Because in that video, I talk quite a lot about how Blair brought in ASBOs against antisocial behavior and Cameron took it away. And just in the past couple of days, Michael Gove, out of nowhere, has written an article saying it was bad that Cameron took away the ASBOs. So I'm thinking, like, well, what's triggered this off then? Either it's just a wild coincidence, or Michael Gove sitting there in his in ladies' underwear is watching my channel on the sly, in his quieter moments, he's watching AA content. My defences of Blair. Broman Hank says, although I have to give Michael Gove credit, Gove's interview with Rupert Lowe was where I actually got the idea that Lowe was going to be the Tory leader. So I know that Gove, in a weird way, is sniffing. Gove is sniffing at the moment. He's sniffing the air and kind of looking for the future of right-wing politics in this country. Obviously, if he's watching this channel, he's in the wrong place, because I'm a center. I am on the center left these days, friends. This is a center left. I'm not even a centrist. I'm not even just sensible and centrist anymore. I am a center left channel in this day and age, friends. So if you're watching Michael Gove, I'm all about blue Labour here, mate. Bugger off, Tory boy. Go on, get out of here, Tory boy. Broman Hank says, this is on Is Britain on the Cusp of Civil War, yesterday's video with Ed Dutton. He says, hello, AA. In wake of recent events, I found myself contemplating Hobbes. I'm guessing that's Thomas Hobbes, not Hobbes from Calvin and Hobbes. I think the definition of civil war is less important than who posits it as a theory, who assents to it, and why. Watching normal conservatives in America in the wake of recent events coming to Schmittian conclusions about the nature of politics seemingly on their own has been unnerving to me. I have been feeling uneasy. It's all simultaneously unserious, yet also feverish and paranoid. Perhaps civil war in either the US or the UK is merely being used as an approximation to describe a general breakdown in law and order, chaos, a random act of violence with the narrative post hoc applied to it. Finally, might this not be itself indicative of the winter of civilization, the consequences of decline? The thing is, and this won't be a very popular thing to say, is that all that's happening in America is that people are full of emotion. People have high emotions. And Nicholas Soldo, who has an account called Fisted by Foucault, don't agree with all of his takes, obviously. You know, it's impossible to agree 100% with everybody's takes, right? But he did have one take, which I did agree with. And he said, look, if you have a look at all the big revolts in history, all the kind of spontaneous acts of violence in history, all of the riots and so on, they tend to happen immediately, right? They tend to happen immediately, okay? Charlie Kirk, the assassination happened last week. It is now 16th, right? I think it happened on the 10th. Is that right? It's now 6 days later. There has been no chimp out. There has been no big riot. There's been nothing. No random acts of violence or arson or anything. And so what Fisted by Foucault was saying, like, he's like, look, it hasn't happened. It's a week later, it hasn't happened. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. People are just venting. They're letting off steam. And in fact, what he did, which I thought was very interesting, is he actually went through the stages that goes on, right? The stages that goes on when something's not going to happen, basically. Let me see if I can find that tweet, because I thought it was one of his more insightful moments. Hold on. So, yes, people are getting smarter about friend-enemy distinction, but are they going to act? Is this going to manifest in anything? It's just not going to. Unfortunately, he's been tweeting quite a lot, so I can't really find this tweet now. Hold on. I can't find it, unfortunately, but I thought it was I thought it was a good point, because basically once you're past the point where the emotion is starting to simmer down, it's not going to manifest in anything kinetic. Basically, it was the point. It gets into a nether realm then, and this will then, you know, the system can always transmute that into, you know, well, we'll vote for me next time type thing. If they can transmute it into something like that, it's not really going to happen. Okay. I mean, my views are, is that whether it's Britain or America, people just aren't going to do anything. People aren't going to do anything when it comes to spontaneous acts like that. Now, they may get organized. They may get more organized. And really, that should be the you know, if you're American, that's the takeaway from the Charlie Kirk situation. Just get organized, basically. Get organized. Don't allow yourself to be shunted into some kind of funnel, which is what people like Ben Shapiro and friends want you back on that reservation. They're trying to maximize Kirk's death for every inch, you know, for that purpose. Obviously, don't go along with that. Organize yourself. That's what I would say. And, you know, many Americans are coming to that conclusion, of course. Unfortunately, I cannot find Soldo's tweet. So let's carry on. If anybody can link it to me, That would be very handy. Hecate says, to combat theft, my local Tesco has simply removed the entire spirit section. The ewes just mill about where it used to be, looking confused. Okay. And I was actually in Sainsbury's yesterday, buying something, popping in and buying some tangerines. And on my way into Sainsbury's, there was a man engaged in argy-bargy and fisticuffs with the security guard. And I think he was trying to steal a bottle of vodka or something like this. He was a hooded youth. He was kind of... you know, the security guard had taken his mobile phone. Funny enough, the big security guard was a big black dude who reminded me of the tower from Police Academy. Yeah, that kind of physiognomy. And the youth was a kind of chavvy white guy. So not automatically what many of you would have been assuming. But that's not the first time I've seen that scenario recently. That seems to happen quite a lot these days in that particular Tesco's. Not even a rough area, but I've seen it, and it's always someone trying to nick some alcohol, it seems. Going to Broadship says, my personal belief, and this is on the emergency stream for Kirk last week, my personal belief is that until we have legitimate concerns about the inability to function as a society, because resources necessary to do that are not available, that is when we will start to have real problems. It may very well reach that point unexpectedly, but as long as we are watching for it, we'll not be surprised by this. I'm not excited about the future. Inevitably, there's going to be economic hardship. However, as bad as it gets, at least we will know that we aren't completely directionless until we are. I'm dropping this well before your video posts on Monday morning, but from what I saw, There was quite a turnout, completely peaceful. I don't think that trend is going to change anytime soon. Well, the official numbers for the Tommy rally were the high end was 150,000 and the low end was 110,000. However, I saw a video from the people who were engaged in the anti-racism counter-protest, which was only able to muster 5,000, which is a humiliatingly small number. And the video from the stand against racism person was one, admitting that it was a humiliation, and secondly, saying that the number, the real number, was a lot bigger than 150,000 and was closer to 1 million. That's what that person said. Also, this week, my phone, unfortunately, ran out of data. It actually caused me to change my contract because I'd never want that to happen again. So I changed my contract. Now I've got, imagine Johnson from Peep Show. I got data coming out my ass, mate. I got data coming out my ass. I have now got so much data, I'll never run out ever again. Thanks, O2. It's not even O2 now. It's Virgin O2 now. I think they merged. Telefonica Virgin is what it is now. They all become one company in the end. Got data coming out my ass, mate. But anyway, because my data ran out on my phone, it interrupted. I was listening to coverage of Charlie Kirk from Dickie Spencer and JF Garipé, who has, let's just say, unique insights into situations like this. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink, say no more. And that cut out and the radio came on. Because when my audio cuts out, the radio comes on in my car. And LBC was on. Shock, horror. Now, thankfully for you, because LBC came on, it means I'm going to make a video on Enoch Powell. Later this week, I've got a video coming out on the subject of James O'Gammon O'Brien, the dog-faced gremlin, and his comments on Enoch Powell. So look forward to that. I think that's the Thursday video this week, right? But also, I was listening to Nick Ferrari. Tell it to you straight. Tell it to you straight, Nick Ferrari, right? And he had, I'm not kidding you, about six callers on in a row. Some of who had been on the Tommy rally. Some of whom were police. Some of whom were just innocent bystanders who happened to be in London that day. And every single one of them, all six of them, said there was never 100,000 there. It was closer to 1 million. All six of his callers said that. And every single time, Nick Ferrari said, well, I'm going to have to agree to disagree with you because the evidence is the police statement is 110,000 and that's the number I'm going to believe. Right? So Ferrari counter-signaled six different eyewitnesses who all said, not all of them were from the march, that there was closer to 1 million. So let us say that the truth is obviously somewhere in between. The police are downplaying the numbers because now people from the far left, from the centre and from the rally itself have all said it's closer to 1 million. Right, and I believe them. I believe them. I believe them. So, I mean, at the very least, there was more than 150,000. I saw the images. It looked like a lot. It looked like a lot of people. Anything to say about the Tommy rally? Well, what I notice is that on Monday morning, I went to the front of every single newspaper that day. I went to the front of the Times, the Telegraph, the Guardian, the Mail, the Express, the Independent. And the BBC and Sky, not the physical newspapers, the web pages, right? What is the front splash? In today's day and age, it's not the front page anymore. It's the front splash. What's the main story you see when you click on the website? Not one of them was Tommy. Not one of them. So that is actually the best case scenario. I discussed it with Carl on that thing last week. I said the best case scenario is There's no major incidents. It goes off without a hitch. And, you know, the energy will probably dissipate afterwards. That's basically what happened. And they show there was a lot of people there. And it's put more pressure on Starmer. No major incidents, as far as I can tell. And it went as well as it could possibly have gone, I think. The best moment for the rally was Trevor Phillips coming out on Sky News and saying, I noticed they've deleted this but now, by the way, but Trevor Phillips on Sky News saying the most remarkable thing about the Tommy rally was how absolutely normal it was, how many absolutely normal people there were there, right? Alarmingly normal, he called it, alarmingly normal. So the Tommy rally has to be chalked up as a success on its own terms. I always tell it down the line, give it to you straight, right? Unlike Nick Ferrari, who says he gives it to you straight and then lies, I just call it as it is, objectively, value-free, and it went out without a hitch. Okay, there were some police injured, right? But that happened, you know, if you got a huge amount of people there, that's going to happen, right? Basically, it was off the front pages by Monday morning, right? I'm remembering now. Four of the newspapers ran with Mandelson Starmer. Two of them, The Sun and The Mirror, had moved on to Tom Skinner has confessed cheating on his wife like the week before their marriage or something. And he's given like a tearful interview in The Sun. That was the front of The Sun and The Mirror. Absolute slop, obviously, but still. So Tom Skinner cheated on his partner, right? Starmer's in trouble because of Mandelson. And then the Guardian chose to run on something to do with welfare, which is, you know, whenever there's not an obvious front story, the Guardian run on something like that. Point is, not a single newspaper, not a single website ran with Tommy as the main story after the weekend was over, which is a win. If they wanted to make Tommy the story, they could have. If they wanted to make violence the story, they could have. If they wanted to paint the rally in the worst possible way, they could have, but they didn't. They didn't do that. So basically, the upshot is, more or less, the mainstream media is normalizing Tommy. More or less, the mainstream media is finally normalizing Tommy. That's basically what's happening, as far as I can tell. I noticed on Nick Ferrari's coverage that the news bulletin on LBC was very careful not to call it the Tommy Robinson rally, but to call it the Unite the Kingdom rally. The Unite the Kingdom rally. They were being very careful, the media. Very, very interesting dynamics indeed. And when O'Brien came on, the only thing O'Brien was interested in talking about was not, oh, look at all the terrible gammon, look at how terrible Tommy Robinson is. What O'Brien was complaining about specifically was Elon Musk's rant, was just Elon Musk's little bit where he appeared to be calling for violence. That was the only thing that O'Brien cared about. He didn't really go into the rally in general. His call-in was about Elon Musk specifically, which showed me basically that overall the rally was not, I mean, the worst fears, which were that Starmer or Sadiq Khan or the Met Police were setting some sort of trap, did not come to pass. And actually, I think the rally was on its own terms a success. Is it going to lead to a revolution? You know, is it going to really lead to change? Blah, blah, blah. Not really, as per. But still, we're in our best case scenario, or better than our best case scenario, rather than in our worst case scenarios or doomsday scenarios, okay? And I just tell you the truth. You know, whatever happens, I will tell you the truth. And that is what happened. And today, now, it's Tuesday, nobody's still talking about the rally, okay? So that means it went as well as it could have, basically. All right, what else? What else? Okay, super chats. Just a few super chats. Coney Current Year says, what did I say on that Charlie Kirk emergency stream 4 days ago? at 1:18:25. I said they knew about Mandelson's friendly correspondence with Epstein before they appointed him as ambassador to the US. Yes, you were right about that, Coney, and all of that is coming out. It's all coming out. R8 says, AIDS giving Starmer troubler. Someone should tell those male models, no? That's an old South Park joke, R8, isn't it? That's an old South Park joke, that old AIDS thing. Coney says, if I had to guess as to when he'll resign, I'd be surprised if he resigns before the autumn budget in November. That might be the final nail in the coffin. Yeah, well, we'll see. I'm not in the business of predictions anymore, as I've said many times. What else? Unprincipled Certainty says, Burnham would make for an amiable booze in a small retail store, but Streeting is a trainee Blairite assassin. Who do you suspect will take the crown, and who do you prefer? Well, I've noticed that Streeting has been outed this past day or so as a woke SJW, right? And he's in there as a Blairite, pretending to be non-woke and so on. And people are digging up his woke past. People are digging up woke comments he's made. So clearly, if Streeting is on manoeuvres, there are people on anti-Streeting manoeuvres. Coney says, imagine being an adult, supposedly serious political commentator for a national broadcaster, and having the most abjectly stupid undergraduate student beliefs, like 100% inheritance tax. I know. Lewis Goodall is a disgrace, but I mean, he didn't need, like, the thing is, I hate all of these people at LBC, right? All of them. But it was Lewis Goodall who decided to just go like ham on this topic all week. And he didn't just do it on LBC and on newsagents. He then doubled and tripled down and went on Piers Morgan, of all places, to hammer it further. So clearly he's on some sort of crusade about this. And I think he needs to be stopped. Ryan H. says, thoughts on Poland becoming a $1 trillion economy without our greatest strength? Also, their military ramp-up, possible next Euro military power? Well, I think there's a vested interest in Poland becoming the next military power as a bulwark against Russia. Zero X says, thoughts on Lowe's mass deportations petition? Yeah, all good. I think it was 99.5 or something, wasn't it? If it was that petition, only like 0.5% were against it, which is pretty amazing. Alfred the Goat says, which actually verifies a position I had before, which is that I think in real democracy, there'd be loads of like really, really, really big majorities like that. And that the notion that it's 50-50 or that every vote is 52-48 is a kind of like illusion or mirage that is kept going. I swear that a real democracy would see very, very swingy results like that. That's my personal view. Alfred the Goat says, in war, traitors are more dangerous than enemy propaganda. They get a public display. Rest in peace, Charlie Kirk. So there we go. Rito Hainer says, the garden shredder is top tier content, AA. Oh yeah, did you want to see my garden shredder? I have spent the morning shredding, I don't know if I'm going to be able to play this on here. If it's copyrighted, you'll know why. Here we are. This is a Hyundai 2400 watt garden shredder. You see, the problem is my phone, as it's being recorded there, is on top of my hot bin. In fact, I took a picture of my hot bin. I'll show you my hot bin now. Here's my hot bin. Shredder came in this box, and this contraption here on the right is my hot bin. That's my old compost heap. You see, the problem is I need to get this garden material here up to 60 degrees to kill the weeds. However, in order to speed up the process, because I want the compost to become compost in 3 months, not 2 years. 3 months. Okay. So this has become a kind of scientific obsession with me now. I want compost in 3 months. But in order to do this, I need to get it up to a high enough temperature. One issue is that the garden waste is not shredded enough. So I bought this shredder in to get the pieces small. Next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to buy literally 10 cabbages, friends. I'm going to buy 10 cabbages. I'm going to chop up those cabbages tomorrow. I'm going to whack them in there to try to get the enough nitrogen, basically, to generate 60 degrees of heat. And then we're going to be rocking and rolling, I'm telling you. But anyway, this is a video of me shredding some garden waste. And why don't we just watch it as I smoke my Upman Magnum 46.
Maybe I should go there too, with the people who are no longer. I feel the rains come flooding through. Take what's given.
It's not a wood chipper. It's not a wood chipper. It's a garden shredder, okay? Call it by its name. A wood chipper is a different piece of kit. It's for something else. This is a garden shredder. Different from a wood chipper. Thank you very much.
Don't ask questions. Do your best in the way. But I can't go soft. I won't go gently. I'll choose the water of the day.
Sent this to my mum, and she texted me back, and she said, "You should start a gardening channel, love." Ha ha ha! So here's a question. Given that this is a kind of online review and this is actual content by me, do you think that the Garden Shredder 2400 would come under allowable expenses because I needed it for work? Question to be asked. If you're an accountant, let me know if that would be allowable, given that I've actually reviewed it online now and I'm making content with it.
Something that is very deep. In a house that's filled with sunlight. Raising warmth while she sleeps. Take what's given. Don't ask questions. Do your best in the way.
Yeah, maybe if the next sale, the next promo code features this footage and they're like this promo code shredder or something. Ah, yes. Then I could say, well, look, this product was an integral part of my online content. Are you sure you need that to sell educational courses online? Well, it's not just educational courses. I also run like a really entertaining YouTube channel, which has got a variety of different content. For example, cigars, an integral part of my image, which I regularly review online. And I regularly make cigar-related content as well, as I'm sure you'd all agree. And also now the shredder is a really key part of my image.
But I can't go softly. I won't go gently. I'll choose the water
I should say, by the way, people are mentioning my Madonna arc. Unfortunately, my third Madonna video dropped at exactly the same, like literally hours after Charlie Kirk died. So unfortunately, my third Madonna video sank without a trace. And since then, it's been slowly but surely climbing back up. When I say it sank without a trace, it was stuck on like 900 views for like a day or something. I'm going to put it in my, I'm going to put it in the chat here, right? Give that a click to get it up to 7,800 so that I can continue my Madonna arc. Because unfortunately, Madonna has been there we go. Click on that, give it a view, right? Even if you click on it for a few seconds so that I can justify continuing to make 80 synth pop related content. I should mention, over the weekend, I was back in Wales and I happened to watch the documentary Synth Britannia, right? If you've been interested in the 80s music stuff, Synth Britannia, a number of people said you should watch this. That video has got absolutely prime, and I'm talking about prime derelict, friends. It is so grim, 1970s, high rises with smash windows. Fucking grim. That is my jam. Depressed northerners making synth music to escape from the grim reality of being up north in post-industrial Britain in the 1970s is my jam. Simon Roberts, if you're listening, we're just doing a virtual high five. You know you love it. You know you love it. It occurred to me watching that documentary that the genre known as dystopian sci-fi, right, dystopian science fiction, was literally just Britain in the 1970s. Clockwork Orange was literally just a kind of a documentary about living in Britain in the 1970s. It's kind of quite inspiring that they made all this kind of aspirational synth pop music coming out of such a grey industrial concrete wasteland that they all grew up in. Several really interesting things about that documentary as well, which I didn't know before. Soft Cell, who obviously you associate with Mark Elman, well, the other bloke from Soft Cell is interviewed in there, and he's this kind of quite rough northern bloke. He's like, oh, you know, if you told me, I'd knock your block off, mate. I was like, mate, you're literally in Soft Cell, one of the gayest bands ever. But he seemed quite hard. It's kind of interesting. Anyway, let's continue with my my gardening ASMR, and then I'll see if there's any more super chats. We'll get out of here.
I could tell you all that evening when it all came tumbling down, with my family gathered around me in a house.
So, another super chat has come in from Altered Sky saying, where is Nita Ebb and Skinny Puppy? Nita Ebb and Skinny Puppy, are they 80s acts? I'm guessing they are. I have not heard of them, if so. What else? Big Driller 14 says, Hitchens, I want Starmer gone, but the pessimist in me is making me think he'll survive somehow. You need to get on the same level as my buddy Pharaoh, right? Pharaoh, who is such a fan of the underdog that he's now kind of like low key supporting the Starmbot to survive. He wants Starmer to survive against all odds, you know. Drongo says, I love this gardening music and cigar review channel. Exactly. 80 synth pop. Cigar reviews and the occasional spot of gardening. What do you reckon, guys? Lionel G says Steve Buscemi's foot next. Martin Greer says more 60s, 70s than 80s. What do you think of, or have you ever listened to Rory Gallagher? I ask in trouble to the bread and circuses during the troubles. I'm not familiar with Rory Gallagher, Martin, I'm afraid. Broman Henk says, as per your position in the debate with Stelios, centre-left means globalism. Ergo, I posit you're having a laugh. Also, I tagged you on the Fisted by Foucault post on X. All right, well, let me try to find that and I'll play more of this. Hold on.
Pick what's good.
All right, so we now have the Fisted by Foucault tweet. Stage one, shock. Stage two, anger. Stage three, outrage. Stage four, demands for direct action. Stage five, internal blame game. Stage six, official process begins. Stage seven, quick dissipation of anger and outrage to a lingering level. It's now between four and five, where things begin to peter out as no direct action takes place, much less action that is wide enough to build upon. Internet is an incredible release valve. That is an S-tier tweet from Fisted by Foucault. Not a lot of people want to hear that right now, but he's bang on, I'm telling you. He is absolutely bang on. And as far as I can tell, Trump is not exactly moving fast on this either. So there we are. And I think that is it, friends. So maybe I'll let this gardening vid play us out as I finish my cigar here. Beautiful. It's probably about a 94, this up 146. Unless any other super chats come in the meantime. These are the dulcet tones of Andrea von Kempen with Water Flowing Downwards, a song that I first heard at the Yummy Mummy Cafe about 2 years ago. I'll choose the water every day, but I can't go softly. I won't go gently. I'll choose the water . If you're wondering, by the way, that's not celery. That is a plant called, it's called mole plant, or what was it? Caper spurge, right? And this is one of the reasons that I want it up to 60 degrees, because that caper spurge there is toxic. If you cut it, a milky kind of toxic substance comes out. And if it gets on your hand, it will actually burn your hand. I thought it's actually quite a pretty plant. And I thought that the previous owners have put it there on purpose. But actually, it is an invasive weed. And I need to kill all of the seeds in that to prevent any outbreaks of it coming, because it's actually highly dangerous. It's called mole plant because apparently that toxic material is so toxic it keeps moles away, right? It'll actually kill rodents and things like that. And back in the old days, beggars, right, would get that plant and they'd rub it on their face, so all their face went red and bulgy, so that it looked like they had some sort of disease, right? That is the history of this plant. But now it's getting into this shredder. All right, that'll do, everyone. People are reminding me now of a way beggar. Have I still got that on here? Bye, everyone. See you soon.
Away with you, beggar. Away with you, beggar. Away with you, beggar.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easily fixed.